Evening, everyone. We're going to call the meeting of the Senate Education Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is approximately 6:05 p.m. on Tuesday, April 12, 2016. We have a quorum to do business with us today. Senator Gardner, Senator Huggins, myself, Senator Dunleavy, and Senator Giesel. I'm expecting Senator Stevens to come by shortly. Please turn off your cell phones. The purpose of the meeting today is to hear House Bill 156, School Accountability Measures, Federal Law. We're going to ask Representative Keller and staff to come forward, please. He's the prime sponsor of HB 156. And he's accompanied by Jim Pound. We're going to ask both folks to enter their name for the record and then begin testimony on their bill. Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity. I'm Representative Wes Keller, sponsor of HB 156.
And I'm Jim Pound, staff of Representative Keller.
So what I really do, thank you. It's busy, hectic times, and I understand what it takes. I'm just going to go through a real brief sectional. I won't take you through the minute detail, but I am prepared to, if that's what you want, and I can also answer questions on any of the sections that you have. CS is the House bill is a takes advantage of the action in Washington, D.C. to rewrite the education in America. It follows a premise that the needs of the kids are better met if we can get closer to local control, the local school district. What the bill does is allows our State Department of Education to stop and take a breather on the test-based education system that's in place. I think we all are aware of the current confusion, and it's been, you know, some chaos on the standard-based assessment. It takes a break. The break is temporary. During the time of the break, state educators will work with local schools and districts, along with concerned parents, to develop a plan, assessment plan for the state that looks closer at the needs of our unique districts. You know, their specific needs and the input, getting input from the teachers who are in a classroom and understand what's really going on with the time lost on the test. The bill also gives the department the opportunity to talk to the university, work with the university for guidance on the college-bound students, and also likewise local businesses and labor unions may be consulted. It also tweaks the comparison of Alaska with other states and the reporting of that. This bill goes a ways toward making an education system in Alaska that meets or exceeds the federal standard. It's not to go less. On the floor, there was an amendment. An amendment is a includes a fix that happened inadvertently last year in HB 44. And it goes in and removes, even though it's lengthy, the last part of the bill, it just removes one reference to one requirement for intervention, crisis intervention training that wasn't meant to be in there. So with that, I think I'll just stop and open myself up to questions or your direction to go over more detailed section by section, whatever you prefer.
So, thank you, Representative Keller. Questions from members of the committee concerning HB 156. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I'm just looking at Section 1, and it should be clear enough, but I'm a little bit confused. Maybe I'm just being dense about page 2. Line 6, where it says, speaking to the report due by or after January 15th, received by each public school and by the state public school system. What are we talking about here? What does this do?
Senator Gardner, I really appreciate the question because when I read that, when I got it back from the drafter, I was confused too, but it's really quite easy to understand. The confusion is that there's the law that is, we didn't change subsection A of 1403-123, and that's where it very explicitly says that the department will give a designation to the education system along with the schools, districts, and all that. And so all this does, in section 1 there, it includes the terminology and the public school system, which wasn't included. The same thing in Section 2. It says they have to give a designation to the schools and the school districts, but it says and to the state system as required in 1403-123A. And then down in the middle of page 2 there, that line 17 to 19, that just giving some of the basis for, by which we can make a comparison and get a designation with our state and other states. And it doesn't get explicit because it leaves, of course, it is all up to the regulations by the state board how this designation is determined. And so it's comparing how we're doing with other states. That's the
center.
Thank you. So is it fair to say this is conforming language, adding some proposed aspects of how we would compare?
I would say a little different. It's a conforming language, but it also clarifies. I've never seen a designation for the education system of the state of Alaska. That could be my fault. But what this does is requires, Section 1 requires that it goes into the state report card. It's all online, that beautiful evaluation we got there. And it just says, and by the way, what you'll compare here, you'll include, like it says in law, giving the whole system a grade and then using the student performance, as a criteria for that.
Thank you.
Questions from the committee? Senator Gardner.
So, and I haven't maybe thought this all the way through, but if we're going to even just temporarily, for 4 years, suspend our assessments, how would we use assessments to evaluate how we're doing compared to other states? Because we're starting out without being able to do apples to apples.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, if I was on the State Board of Education and I saw this, what I would do is use NAEP. Okay. It's a very well-known test.
That's gonna be my next question.
But it isn't that specific, and it's intentionally not that specific because it puts faith and trust in the fact that we're all working toward the same end here, and they know how to give us a designation and then justify that designation by the data available wherever they find it.
So. Thank you.
Additional questions for members of the committee? Seeing none, I'm just going to take a brief at ease.
we're back on the record, and we have additional questions for the sponsor, Representative Keller, on HB 156.
Thank you. And Representative Keller, I'm looking on page 3, line 7, about the improvement plan, including measures to increase local control of education and parental choice and the not require direct increase in funding. When I read this, I'm thinking, how can they increase local control? I mean, we already are a state that in statute and in practice supports local control of education, and we have a system of electing school board members that set policies. And while I understand there's a certain resistance against some federal efforts, there's also a lot of state efforts that are interfering with local control. And some of us support those efforts, and there's some that we don't. Is this aimed at the state, at federal government, or at other? Can you speak a little bit to what you're thinking about with this? And similarly with parental choice, are we talking about choice of schools, choice of participation? Just speak to that a little bit.
Sure. To the chair, Senator Gardner, this is what I'm thinking about here is a perspective of the local school districts being the closest to the parents. When we hear as legislators, we hear from the parents when things go wrong and whatever. But their real window into what goes on is their local school board. And that's the intent, and that was what I'm thinking here, is that when we're talking about an improvement plan for a school that is designated as, having problems, that whatever is worked out in the context of the district with the parents and the teachers involved. And I do want to also add, it's consistent with that, is in Section 8 where it says take a break. It's asking for two things, and one is a review of Title 14 assessment accountability laws with the idea they'll report back to us, to make it easier. So part of your question was, the state mandates, obviously that's a real problem, and the presumption is that we will get back, information on laws we can change to reduce undue state control. So I hope that answered your question. I tried, but...
Thank you. We'll see how the testimony goes. Thank you.
Any additional questions for the sponsor this time?
See none. Thank you. So at this point, we're going to move into some amendments. So I'm going to ask Senator Huggins if he would move Amendment 1, and I'll object for discussion.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment Number 1, which is X-ray.alpha.1.
And I'll object for discussion. I'll ask my assistant, Krista McDonald, to come forward, please, and go through the amendment. Please state, identify yourself for the record and who you're associated with.
For the record, my name is Krista McDonald, staff to Senator Dunleavy. Amendment 1 takes components of Senate Bill 89 regarding parental rights that went through this committee earlier this year. It's excluding the abortion services provider piece, so it would allow parents to opt out of standards-based assessments, activities, classes, or programs. It would also provide a notice 2 weeks before sex education takes place, but it would not require written permission from a parent. So it's essentially creating an opt-out of sex education. The committee will probably be pretty familiar with the provisions of this amendment as it was thoroughly vetted through last year and earlier this year.
So I would say that SB 89 was one of the most thoroughly vetted, discussed, reviewed, looked at, talked about bill. And this was brought forward, and I want to thank the Association of Alaska School Boards, Mr. Root, and he represents, and they were very... very kind and patient. They pointed out that in the kind of a dust of getting things done last spring into the special session with HB 44, this got kind of caught in the in the CS, and it kind of put their association in a position because they issue a pretty good survey that they collect data from, and we had talked about it all summer long to try and figure out a way to help, and Representative Keller's bill offers an opportunity here as we go into the session. We were hoping that there could be other vehicles, but this is kind of down to the last moment here. I would ask Mr. Wooten if he'd come forward and just if he has anything to say about this amendment. Please state your name for the record. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Norm Wooten. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I certainly appreciate the committee considering this this amendment, and we support this amendment primarily because the Association of Alaska School Board administers what we call our SCCS, that's School Climate and Connectedness Survey. Approximately 35 districts across the state of Alaska take this survey. It's used by many social service agencies. It's used by the department, and it's used primarily by school districts. And I want to be real clear that this survey does not ask questions about family life. Okay, it has been intentionally and deliberately designed to not do that. It asks questions, and this committee has been provided with a copy of that test previously, previously.
Mr. Wood, can I just stop you just for a second?
Yes.
Just a brief idea. Amendment 1. Amendment 1 has been moved. I've objected for purposes of discussion. And are there any questions for Kristen McDonald on Amendment number 1? Seeing no questions, I'll remove my objection. Amendment number 1 passes. We're going to go to Amendment number 2. I would ask Senator
Chairman, I move Amendment number 2, X-ray.alpha.2.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Krista, if you can once again explain Amendment 2, and if we have some additional testimony, we'll bring up Ms. Perry with the School Administrators Association.
Amendment number 2, physical examinations for teachers. This amendment would eliminate the district's responsibility to pay for mandatory health exams for teachers. It's been requested by the ACSA and AASB.
And could you please read the paragraph, the section, it says section 1430075 with the language in there so that we understand what is in that particular section? Physical examinations for teachers, A.
Section 1430.075, physical examinations. A school district may require physical examinations of teachers as a condition of employment. A school district may not pay the cost of physical examinations for teachers.
And we're going to be changing the part that says may not pay to is not required to pay.
Okay.
And that section will say a school district is not required to pay the cost of physical examinations for teachers.
Mr. Chair?
Yep. So you're amending the amendment?
At their request.
I understand that, but just in terms of the bookkeeping, yes. I mean the record keeping of this.
Okay, this is an amendment to the amendment.
And I'm going to object just because I have a quick question about it.
Senator?
And that is, what's the difference between saying a school district is not required to pay the cost of physical examinations or a school district may pay the cost of physical examinations?
Barry, please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lisa Skiles Parity. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And Mr. Chairman, would you like me to address the
yes,
question?
Yes, please.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner. if I may, this amendment came from a joint effort with AASB and ACSA, in which we surveyed our members and came up with a joint list of items that would be identified for inefficient areas which we could have cost savings given our current fiscal shortfall. And in the response from our members, this was identified as an area that we could eliminate the district's responsibility. And the reason for the request to change it from may not to is not required is that some feedback that we received is that in different negotiated agreements, it is agreed by the parties to pay for these. And in those cases, certainly there's agreement by the parties. We'd want to support that.
Mr. Chair, it seems to me that it's clearer and more direct to simply say a school district may pay the cost of physical examinations. Fewer words.
I mean, actually, I think not required allows them to pay, but does it imply that they will pay unless they decide they want to pay, if that makes sense. It's a little redundant, but.
What you're asking, Senator Gardner, is the original language of may not pay?
May pay.
In keeping with the language of the preceding sentence, they may require it, they may pay.
Just, Ms. Perry, can you talk to that? Do you have an opinion on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gardner, while I appreciate the simpler language, I do agree that saying is not required has the connotation that a district, that it's not implied that they will pay, that in fact that it's implied that they won't pay unless there is an agreement that they do so. Okay. And we would like to honor the fact that there are agreements that they have agreed to with their associations to pay, and so we don't want language that would interfere with that.
All right. I'll withdraw my objection to the amendment to amendment number two.
Amendment is adopted. I object to amendment two. Are there any additional questions regarding amendment two? I'll withdraw my objection, and amendment two is passed.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number three, which is x-ray dot alpha dot three.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Mr. Rutten, would you like to come back up? You were doing so well. I'm going to have Krista read the amendment.
Amendment number three, page one, line one, following act relating to questionnaires and surveys administered in public schools. Page 14, following line five, would insert a new bill section to read Section 16, Section 4, Chapter 2, SSSLA 2015 is repealed, and the bill would be renumbered accordingly.
Thank you. Mr. Rutten, would you like to say a few words?
I won't repeat myself, Mr. Chairman. I'll just pick up where I
we're doing well.
Where I left off, okay?
I'd actually like him to repeat himself. I've lost that context.
Mr. Wood, could you please testify to this amendment?
Yes, briefly, I will. Mr. Chairman, ASB administers what we call SCCS, or School Climate and Connectedness Survey, to about 35 school districts each year throughout the state of Alaska. I want to be real clear that that these surveys do not ask questions, or they do not intrude into a student's family life. We don't ask them what their parents do. We don't ask them what's going on in their homes. That's not the purpose of this. The purpose is to improve school climate. Okay, counselors, teachers, and other folks working in schools use these surveys to improve the school climate in their surveys. We're trying to eliminate behaviors such as bullying, promiscuity, substance abuse, other destructive behaviors that students are so susceptible to in this day and age. We want to give our folks the tools that they can do preventive measures and teach students about healthy behaviors within their schools. Again, we deliberately designed the test so that it would not intrude on families. We wholeheartedly support the opt-out provisions for parents, and we have no problem with that. And we, in fact, in the instructions that we give to our schools, they are required to give 2 to 3 weeks notice to families that the survey is going to be administered. The survey is available at the school for parents to come in and to take a look at it. We support parents' rights to opt out of that if they so choose. And just as an anecdotal comment, we have very few parents that opt out of it, very, very few across the state. So they, I believe, see the benefit of it and want their students to be able to attend school in a safe environment, one with good school climate.
So this is
thank you for the amendment.
Thank you. This is a technical fix. Are there any additional questions for Mr. Wood? Seeing no additional questions, I'll remove my objection, and the amendment passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 4, x-ray.alpha.4.
I object for purposes of discussion. This particular amendment is a combination effort amongst several agencies. Ms. McDonald, would you like to explain the amendment and walk through it, and then we'll have other folks come up to testify?
Of course. Amendment number 2...
Nope.
Amendment number 4 makes technical corrections to House Bill 44's various trainings that passed last year. It replaces the word school with districts. The rationale for this is districts are reporting that tracking the trainings at the school level is too logistically challenging for them. This is incurring additional costs. Replacing school with district will allow the districts the flexibility they need to better organize and schedule these trainings. The second change is removing the language in grades 7 through 12, as this was in conflict with language that passed in House Bill 44, and I'd like the department to elaborate on it.
If the representative of the department could come up, please, state their name for the record. Ms. McDonald, if you can make some room there for a moment. They'll have two folks sitting down. And then please begin your testimony.
For the record, Susan McCauley, Interim Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development.
For the record, I'm Todd Brocious. I'm an Education Administrator with the Department of Education.
Thank you.
The change in wording from school to district is in response to belief in districts that quantifying that data at the school level may be overly burdensome in terms of tracking it, particularly in terms of educator mobility. So when a school or a district is held to a certain percentage of its educators who need to have received the training, and when the tracking of meeting that percentage is at the school level, that can actually vary widely year to year just because of teachers moving around, not even from district to district, but even within a district itself. So let's say that one year they're in compliance, so to speak, with the required percentage, and they have ensured that 52% have received the training. The next year, for whatever reason, maybe a new school opens and a whole bunch of those teachers go to be in that new school, they dip down, and so they're no longer in compliance with the requirement for a certain percentage every other year. So the recommendation or the information we've gotten from them is that the same kinds of accountability and the same percentages of accountability applied to the district level rather than the school level is far more manageable, far easier to track, and probably, we'd leave that to you to decide, accomplishes the same intent of the original legislation.
Questions for members of the committee regarding this amendment? Seeing none, I will withdraw my objection. The amendment is adopted. We are now on to the next amendment.
Yes,
Senator
Mr.
Huggins.
Chairman, I move amendment number 5, x-ray.alpha.5.
And I object for purposes of discussion. Ms. McDonald, would you please come forward again?
Good
For the record, Krista McDonald. Amendment number 5 would read Section 15, AS 3630850B, is amended by adding a new paragraph to read, contracts of the Department of Education and Early Development for student assessments required under AS 1403123 and AS 1407020 would be inserted, and it would be renumbered accordingly. This would exempt deed from procurement exemption for the purposes of a student assessment for standardized assessments.
I'd ask the department to come forward, please, and speak to this amendment and be able to answer any questions from members of the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Susan McCauley, Interim Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. This amendment is in a statute related to the state's procurement code. There is a lengthy list of things for which the procurement statutes are not applicable, a list of, I believe, 46 things. The recommendation here is to add to that list of exemptions the state's state-mandated assessment for students. What that would mean is that we would still need to go through a process for selecting that assessment, but it would not hold us to the expectations of a state's procurement code and process, which requires a formal RFP, bids or proposals to be submitted, a committee to be formed. There are certain scoring criteria that have to be considered. There is a period of time whereby a proposer can challenge the decision. It's very lengthy. May not, this is, I guess, a bit of conjecture, but that process may or may not result in putting us in the best position to negotiate financially in terms of an assessment. It certainly isn't, and probably for good reason in some instances, it isn't a speedy or efficient process. There are states that don't, that have this exemption. They're not required to procure or select their state's assessments through formal procurement code. And when I've talked with some folks who do it that way, they typically put out an RFI instead, a request for information. They do receive proposals, so to speak, but they have a lot more flexibility in terms of how they select ultimately the company that ends up being their vendor than the more tightly governed process of procurement. We would be, I guess, freer to determine what process is going to, in our opinion, work well for us, to engage stakeholders in that process in terms of selection. And then after an RFI and are identifying specific vendors that may hold promise, negotiate with them directly in terms of what they're able to do and what the financial terms of the contract are.
Questions from members of the committee? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I'm not sure that you're the right person to answer the question, but we have an RFP process which is supposed to safeguard state interests, make sure that decisions are made carefully, appropriately. It's a little bit cumbersome. It takes more time and undoubtedly costs more in some ways. And so what this amendment does is give us more flexibility and possibly make things faster. And I guess my real question, am I understanding that's what we're trying to do? Faster, cheaper, ideally?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner. I think that we are also looking at some circumstances, and I would say there are certainly some current circumstances, but I actually feel that they would be applicable in the future. And that is that, I guess it's the question of whether that process actually results in our selecting the fit that is best for Alaska. Our current circumstances have a really short timeline. I've heard many of you say we want to do this right. We used a formal procurement process before, by the book, lengthy months in advance. And it ultimately, for a variety of reasons, of course, didn't result in something that has worked well in Alaska. I guess additionally, when I look at the things that are currently exempted from that procurement code, and I have no idea why they were, I do find in some cases some things that are somewhat similar at least. If, for example, exempted is selecting an assessment for the purpose of licensure procedures. So it isn't that there's this list of things that are entirely dissimilar to what we're procuring. There are actually things that feel somewhat similar to what we are procuring, and for whatever reason, and I don't know what those things were deemed as appropriate to exempt from procurement. I know in our circumstance, when I think about a process that is likely to result in a good fit for Alaska, I mean, we've already started to engage in a lot of work with our superintendents. I met with them as recently with the Alaska Superintendents Association and their working group, which they put together to work with us. I met with them as recently as last Wednesday. We've given an assessment to all of them. They've completed it. We're going about this in a way with a high level of engagement from them. When you then have to enter into a procurement process, there is a limitation to continued engagement because it all becomes pretty tightly governed by that process. I guess I feel that it is at least possible, if not probable, that a different process may result in a better outcome for us.
Thank you. I guess it seems to me that if our process limits engagement of stakeholders to the extent that we have 47 waivers already, maybe we have a different problem than what we're fixing here.
Thank you. Any additional questions?
No.
Any additional questions from members of the committee? I will remove my objection. Amendment 5 passes.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 6, x-ray.alpha.6.
I object for purposes of discussion. Ms. McDonald, if you can once again state your name for the record and begin your testimony on this.
For the record, Krista McDonald, staff to Senator Dunleavy. Amendment number 6 would simply repeal the 70% rule. This repeal has been requested by AASB Resolution 2.20, as well as the Alaska State Board of Education. They feel the rule itself applies on an arbitrary percentage to a complex system.
Thank you, and we have Ms. Perry with the School Administrators Association. Could you please identify your name for the record and begin your testimony on this amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Lisa Skiles Parody. I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I speak in support of the amendment to repeal the minimum expenditure for instruction for school districts. This last year, there were 24 school districts that had to request a waiver of the 70% minimum expenditure for instruction. This is a yearly requirement, and they applied for those waivers because they were unable to comply with the requirement. Historically, approximately half or more, up to 32 school districts in Alaska require a waiver each year, rendering the requirement essentially pointless or moot. So at this point, it is unnecessary paperwork. The 70-30% were arbitrarily arrived at to begin with. It's my understanding that the percentages were adapted from laws being passed in other states, thereby having no real relevance to Alaska specifically. Numerous rural districts are structurally unable to meet the requirement due to high maintenance, housing, energy costs. In fact, the State Department, this is the packet of waivers from the most recent set, and there are two patterns identified in the waiver requests most often needed. The first is districts with budgets of $3 million or less, and the second is districts with operations and maintenance over 20% of the operating fund budget. And in those cases, they are rural sites that contribute to high operations and maintenance, and energy costs were a significant component in the costs of that category. D does have other mechanisms in place to monitor district spending. Um, Their fiscal department, the department's school finance staff reviews all 53 school districts' operating budgets and contact each district. The budget review includes many components, including compliance with the law and regulation, review of revenues, review of expenditures at the object level, review of beginning and ending fund balance, review of use of chart of accounts for consistent statewide reporting, observation of staffing levels by function, observation of progress. So I share that with you just to say that it isn't that without this, that review is not taking place. It is. And during this time of shrinking resources, we really can't afford to put staff time in school districts and DEET, as well as the State Board of Education time toward this requirement, which essentially serves no useful purpose at this time. And I would also offer that the State Board of Education recently passed a resolution, which I believe you have or I know has been given to your office, supporting the same, the repeal of the same.
Thank you. Questions from members of the committee? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I just have a question for the acting commissioner. Is she going to speak to this?
Department, yeah. Please come forward.
Thank you.
Susan McCauley, interim commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. Dr. McCauley, thank you. Do you see any value to retaining the 3070 language?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, the state board wrestled with this a bit, and ultimately they felt that when that many districts are consistently, year after year, requesting a waiver, probably there is something wrong with the underlying structure or request or requirement, actually. I believe Dr. Parody spoke accurately in a manner that accurately reflects the state board sentiments, and that is that with some rising costs that are not arguably under districts' controls, it may not be a feasible objective for them any longer. Also felt that the time that it takes to justify those numbers, document those numbers, prove up those numbers every year is for inevitably what was and has been year after year after year approving the waiver, not justifiable time for districts any longer. I think the underlying sentiment and the original intent was a valuable one, and that is to prioritize monies as being focused on and spent toward instruction of students. But as Dr. Parody said, this isn't the only check and balance on how districts spend their money. We review other financial documents from districts, their chart of accounts. This, frankly, for the board, at the end of the day, felt more like a burdensome hoop-jumping mechanism than consistent with the original intent of this legislation.
Senator.
Is it accurate to say that with passage of this amendment, we're really resigning ourselves to acknowledging that a smaller portion of the funding available to schools is going to go into instruction?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, I personally would not assume that. It may be that they will, in fact, be spending as much or more on instruction as they ever have. We're just not asking them on an annual basis to show us that by submitting these documents and receiving formal approval from the State Board of Education. Thank you.
If my history serves me correctly, this law came into being around the same time as SB 36 in around 1997. That was the time when we were adopting the high school qualifying exam. There was the accountability movement, and there was a feeling that that school districts may have placed their resources not in the best of spots to have an outcome in terms of performance. And from my perspective, what has happened over time, it's become more of an exercise is what it is. It's just an exercise. Waivers are granted. I think waivers are granted in every case except maybe one, but every waiver there was, every application for waiver there was. So it's sort of lost its meaning. I think as we go down the road here and we start to have more and more discussions as to what school should be about, what we should be measuring, what we should be valuing, I think then once we get that straightened out, I think you'll see your resources being allocated to support those outcomes. So really that's what it's about, having your resources support outcomes. So
Are there any additional questions on this amendment? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. The amendment passes. We're going to open it up for public testimony. Public testimony is open. Is there anyone in the audience right now that wishes to testify on this bill? We're going to open public testimony. We'll keep it open today. Tomorrow, we plan on closing it tomorrow evening and moving the bill. Seeing none, we'll go on. Excuse me, Senator Huggins?
We've got some people online.
Yes.
Yep.
Disregard. Okay. Online, we have David Neese out of Anchorage. David, if you can say your name for the record. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please do give your testimony.
My name is David Neese. I'm speaking for myself. Originally, I was going to just testify on one topic. The 70-30 amendment was originally a 65-35, and every single year since it was instituted, the state school board has tried to get it run back out of town. One of the reasons that they do is because it is not going into direct instruction. A prime example is the Pelican School District, where 75% of the budget goes to the superintendent's office. So there's a reason it's there. Getting rid of it probably is not the best idea. My real reason to call is because you have the battle of local control, which began in the 1960s, and local control is best exercised when you exercise it at the school level, and a lot of the amendments I was listening to were district-type amendments. You have a system of districts that spend your money and you give them a check and you have no control over it after you write the check. So basically a lot of this will eliminate most accountability. Judge Gleason, however, pointed out in her decision that it doesn't matter who you hand the responsibility of education in the state of Alaska off to. You, the legislature, are the ones that are on the hook if you end up in court. And so when you have legislation such as this that's sitting there that might fix or make a problem worse, you have to keep in mind that at the end of the day, it's not how well-performing the Alaska State Board is doing. It's not how well-performing the local school district is doing. Not even how well the school is performing. If there is an issue, it comes back to roost on your porch. ESSA, in your documents, you have a letter from the U.S. Department of Education that says that you are not exempt from testing this year, despite what the superintendent, I know you have a meeting tomorrow morning, but that is, on TV there used to be a $65,000 question, that's the $100 million question. And I'm a little concerned that that wasn't addressed in any of the amendments in here, because it sounds like we want to push the road and testing down the road for about 6 or 7 years. And under ESSA, you have to have in place a testing. Now, if you're going to choose to develop a new test, what are you paying the employees at D to do in the meantime? They're supposed to be looking at the test, evaluating, and giving a report on January of next year. What are they going to report, that you did not take a test? So a few concerns with this. Right now, the 70-30 is probably my biggest concern. The funding for the $100 million for the Title I, III, IV, and VII programs and IX are of grave concern. That's a $100 million question. And I think perhaps that you might want to hold this bill until after the briefing tomorrow. Because if you are going to have to test every student in the state again before the end of the school year and continue testing them next year, that kind of justifies the people indeed. But if you are not going to do any testing for the next 3 years, I don't know why they're working. So just my thoughts. I appreciate the time to testify. And if there are no questions, I will go on. Thank you.
Thank you, David. You will always have some very good ideas. The bill is going to be held over. And it will be held over into tomorrow evening, and so we'll have additional public testimony tomorrow. So thank you, David. Jack Walsh, Superintendent of Craig School District.
Good evening, Senator and committee members. I'm Jack Walsh. I'm the superintendent in Craig, and I do apologize. I had a brief emergency that pulled me away, so I didn't hear all the discussion, but I do appreciate you addressing this bill. My interest was to just thank the efforts that are being made on behalf of schools, and also to kind of help us with a situation that came up as a result of some of the legislation that went around the Aaron's Law and Breeze Law passage of last year. I think that there's some accommodations here that will make it easier for our school districts to meet the intent of the law and to make sure that we're covering those topics that are important for our staff, but also limits a little bit of whether that has to be every staff member or just some over time, and I appreciate that kind of flexibility. I do want to tell you that when I came back in and started listening again, Dr. Parody was talking about the 70-30, so I didn't hear the conversation prior to that. But, you know, as a person who's worked in a number of districts around the state, large districts and smaller districts, I know that 70-30 piece has been a big challenge for many of us for many years. I appreciate the way that it's been characterized, that for years it was viewed as a way to kind of help us with our accountability and make sure we're focused on the important parts of instruction. But we do recognize that for some of our smaller districts, and when I was in Bristol Bay for 6 years, I had to write an explanation for why I couldn't quite make 70%. But, you know, I was in the upper 60s most years, and I think we were doing everything we could to funnel most of our money towards instruction. But it just got to that place where you recognize that if you have a smaller budget and you have high fuel costs and high maintenance costs, it's just next to impossible to make. And I do believe that it's not our only measure of accountability or even one of the more valid ones, but it is something that I think superintendents will continue to stay focused on, trying to put as much of our finances and resources into classrooms and instruction. And I appreciate you considering that it may be time for that to go away. I want to thank you for your time tonight and for allowing me to speak. I'm available if you have any questions.
Any questions for Jack Walsh, Superintendent Prague? Thank you, Jack. Next is Dr. Barbara Haney up in North Pole. Dr. Haney, are you online?
Yes, I am. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to this. I have been studying this bill with great interest, and I was kind of lukewarm about it until the language of SB 89 was attached. Now I'm very happy with this bill. I do have some reservations about the procurement process for assessment being waived. I think it's important to keep that procurement process in place, but in general, I like the bill. My only other issue that I would ask the committee to consider, there's quite a bit in here about parent rights and parental engagement, but when I look at who's doing the work, I see a lot of people who are employed in the school district, and I don't know if there's a way in this to include some parents. I would hate to be for it to become a PTA kind of thing, but yeah, I don't know. There might be some kind of mechanism to include parent input in this a little bit more. But other than that, I do appreciate the bill and support it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Dr. Haney? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Can you speak with a little more detail about your concerns about the procurement code waiver?
Yeah. You know, maybe we do have a cumbersome procurement process in the state, but I think it's important that testing or any other resource that the state goes through, I think there's a procurement process in place for a reason. And there are past experiences in acquiring things that have that procurement process in place. You know, when you look across the nation, there's an awful lot of chicanery that has gone on in other states where the test has not gone through the procurement process. And I just think it's a good safeguard. Now, maybe that process can be streamlined generally for the state. That might be an issue. And I certainly think that is something that could be addressed. But I don't know that waiving the test from the procurement process is the wisest move of this committee. In the past, we've always gone through a procurement process for testing, and I don't know why suddenly it would need to be waived.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for Dr. Haney? Thank you, Doctor. Seeing none, I don't see anyone else online. We're going to leave public testimony open. And we're just going to do a quick and ease. Excuse me? Oh, I'm sorry. Ed Gray from Sitka. Mr. Gray, I apologize. Can you identify yourself for the record and give your testimony?
Yeah, thank you. My name's Ed Gray. I'm a parent, I'm representing myself, and I'm a parent in the Sitka School District. I have a 14-year-old, a 17-year-old, and so I do want to support this bill. I don't have the amendments in front of me, so I'm listening, doing the best I can here. And so I am for the mandated, break in assessments, and in the Senate Bill 89 language that was added to it. That was primarily my interest in testifying about this bill, was that parental rights, that codifying parental rights would be addressed. And so I look forward to getting those amendments so I can see that. And, you know, as a parent, I just want to, on behalf of that, I understand I'm not the most sophisticated person in the room, but parents, we're still always looking for a place at the table. And having read through this, I don't know where that happens, besides voting for a school board member and so forth. But a lot of what's been going on in the last several years is, as federal law, it was more like it was implemented upon us as parents, and that we never addressed that, and there was no partnership in it. It was just something that was implemented upon us, and in our case, in our district, the administrator here actually, was in an agreement with the federal government directly circumventing the state, and it felt to parents like, that the superposition was simply a compliancy, it was just a compliancy agent for the federal government. Just want to address the issue of having parents at the table and feeling like there's still like a partnership in the future for us, that we can partner with our school districts and our state and our schools. That parental rights portion of that be recognized and codified within the context of the bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. And I'd ask Lisa Perry to come up one more time. And just before she begins to speak, I want to make a comment that there's a theme here running through this bill, and I'll just be very brief. But a lot of us are concerned about imposition. And that's what this is imposition by the feds, imposition sometimes by the state. And I really do empathize with what Ed was saying, and that's parents are kind of way down on the food chain. And if they remain way down on the food chain, I don't think we should be surprised at some of our outcomes and some of the discontent and some of our exiting our neighborhood schools for other alternatives. And I think we can continue to ignore those signs, and it's just not going to bode well for public education going into the future. So I'm hoping that as we go through this process over the next couple of years, that things that Mr. Gray has said, Mr. Neese has said, Dr. Haney has brought up, others in the school profession such as Jack Walsh and others, that we take into account that we're really serving customers that are outside the system, and that the kids should be more than just cogs or chits, and that parents need to be viewed as much more than in the way at times. So with that, Ms. Perry, you had some comments to make?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Lisa Skiles Parody with the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And briefly, I'm the executive director for the Alaska Superintendents Association, and as well, and we too are very concerned about having a robust accountability system, and as you heard Dr. McCauley testify, have an ongoing working group to be of assistance to the Department of Education and Early Development in this process. Prior to Representative Keller filing this bill, he asked me to review it, and I shared with him that we appreciate him saying that we want to do this right, not fast. But I also shared with him, and I would be remiss if I did not say here today on behalf of districts, particularly in Alaska's current fiscal climate, that with an indeterminate fiscal note, it's important that you recognize there are concerns about potentially compromising federal funding. Certainly districts can't survive without title funds at this point. And so wanted to put that on the record, but also just ask that as you proceed with this, to please thread this needle carefully on behalf of districts.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And just a comment to that, I really appreciate Representative Keller bringing this bill forward. And I'll tell you why. It goes to what I was just speaking to before Ms. Parody began to speak. The federal government, in my opinion, has been very coercive in their approach to state education. Many instances, they cut out state legislators in the whole process. They cut out parents. And they rely on practitioners, which are good people, but they rely on practitioners. And as a result, you see what is essentially small rebellions all over the country, 150,000 students in New Jersey, students in Washington, students everywhere, not wanting to take their tests. And originally in 2001, when this component was put in the NCLB, it was done because the feds believed that schools would try and mask and hide low-performing subgroups. But what they're finding is the people that don't want to test oftentimes are white-collar folks, lawyers, doctors, who just are tired of having it shoved down their throat, that this is what you're going to do. And what I like about this bill is that we have an opportunity here in Alaska to get very close to calling your bluff, because I've been on the phone with Representative Keller to Washington, and we have asked them directly on more than one occasion, so tell us what would happen if we didn't do A or we didn't do B. They aren't specific. They won't tell you. Kind of reminds me of a meeting I was just in about 2 hours ago on being specific. They'll hint at something terrible happening, but it's as if they're dealing with children. If you don't do this, you know, the boogeyman's going to get you. Well, you know what, in my opinion? Let's find out what the boogeyman really looks like. Let's see what they really have in mind. And I don't think Representative Keller is advocating for this, but let's have them answer the question. What exactly is going to happen to the state of Alaska if we do not do what you want us to do? Because truly, we aren't subjects of the crown. We're people. And they keep saying to us, at least in my conversations with them, with Representative Keller, we're doing this for you. We're doing this for the students. We're trying to help them. And I got to tell you, if this is their help, we need to have a serious discussion with them. So I don't see Representative Keller. I don't see myself. I don't see this body putting Alaska on a suicide mission with funding and the feds. But I do believe this relationship needs to mature just another level. What is it that you want, and what is it that we want? And this should be a partnership and not a top-down endeavor. Any closing comments for today before we have recess till tomorrow? Senator Gardner.
I have a question for Dr. Parody. And that is, thinking about the assessments and our sort of hiatus in requiring assessments, at the same time we're emphasizing local control, support for local control and parental engagement, does the underlying bill prohibit districts who want to offer assessments without an interruption from doing so?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gardner, this is my belief, and I would certainly defer to the department because I know they've spent considerable time looking at it, but I believe it does not prohibit a district from assessing on their own, if I understood your question correctly.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, could I have the commissioner come up?
Please come
the room. Thank you.
For the record, Susan McCauley, Interim Commissioner for the Department of Education, Early Development. The department, my apologies, through the chair, Senator Gardner, the language in Section 8 does not prohibit a district from administering a state assessment. It says that we may not require a school district or a school to administer a statewide standards-based assessment. The concern that Dr. Parity spoke to is that the federal language requires the Department of Education, all local departments of education, to assess all students in grades 3 through 8 and once in high school. So the concern is that if that is the federal requirement imposed on the Department of Education in Alaska, and the Department of Education in Alaska cannot, as this language would state, impose that requirement on districts, it is possible and probably quite likely that we would be out of compliance with federal law. We're guessing. The fiscal notes being indeterminate reflects that we don't know what the repercussions would be if we were. The bill, the language speaks to a two-year hiatus, not after July 1st of 2016 and not after July 1st of 2018. We will, during that time period, probably about a year from now, have to submit to the U.S. Department of Education our state plan to comply with the new Every Student Succeeds Act. That state plan maintains the assessment requirement in states. We would need to indicate, if this bill is passed, we would need to indicate the restrictions for the Alaska Department of Education in imposing that assessment requirement on our districts, and we do not know what the ramifications of that would be. We do know that when we have asked the department for the title funding that might be at risk, they talk to us about Title I, Title II, Title III, and so on, and the amount of that for Alaska is $99 million, which is why our fiscal note is indeterminate but specifically mentions up to $99 million, which is what Dr. Parity is referring to in terms of possible but not known or prescriptive ramifications.
So the ship has already sailed, and Dr. McCauley is the captain, because the State Department just suspended the AMP assessments. So we're going to find out here where this leads us, but I don't think there's anybody in the state that, like I said, wants to put Alaska on a bizarre trip and endanger Alaska. But I think we're going to find out, and we should. Like I said, it's the only way to have, I think, a respectful, mature relationship, because our dealings with the federal government has consisted of a handful of folks at the USDOE telling us what we must do and what we cannot do. And then when questioned, it starts to peter out after that as to what would happen and why we're doing something and what's the purpose of it. So I'm not afraid. I'm not concerned. I think we'll get the answers to these questions soon.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those are important considerations, and I understand they're the heart of the discussion, but I had a smaller question, which is simply, if a district wants to assess their students, and you said, yes, they still can, you just can't require it, is there a path for them to do so, a test to use, and or a cost to districts who want to assess their students for their own purposes?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, the assessment in question in this section is not relevant, in my opinion, not relevant to those assessments that districts might choose to administer locally. Districts administer locally a variety of assessments, typically more interim than summative assessments. It is speaking to the state mandated assessment required by the ESEA. What my read on this is that the department could not require districts to do that. Districts could voluntarily, during this 2-year period of time, choose to administer the state mandated assessment. Right now, they are required to do so because we pass down to them the requirement imposed on the department and the expectation of a 95% participation rate at the local level. This would say that we could not impose those requirements. But I don't mean to make the question bigger than it is. It's not speaking to assessment in general. It is specifically referencing statute that is relevant to the assessment required by the U.S. Department of Education.
Thank you. One last question.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. And if a district wanted to do an assessment for whatever reason and the AMP is not available to them, could the NAEP test be used?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, that would not meet the federal requirements in several different ways. The NAEP assessment is only given in grades 4 through 8. It is not given annually, and it is only given to a sampling of students. The federal requirement is all students grade 3 through 8 and once in high school annually, and I already said, and it's all students. So the NAEP doesn't do that.
I understand, not in the way it's used currently,
yes.
But could it be jury-rigged?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Gardner, I don't believe so. Those are tightly, you know, controlled in terms of sampling and administration.
Okay,
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions for Mr. Pound.
Mr. Pound, please come forward. Identify yourself for the record. Who you're with.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jim Pound, staff representative Keller.
Yeah, so Mr. Chairman, if I could have the liberty, yes. So that you didn't have to kind of
yes.
Speak to all of us. My questions being as I'm self-appointed as your fan club president right now. All right. So how long have you been doing this?
Through Chair Senator Huggins, I've been in the building in a government capacity since 1992.
Yeah, long time. And I've known Jim not that whole time, but a big piece of it. I mean, he's been a warrior. I've seen him when he's bloodied. I've seen him when he's smiling. But he's always has a great spirit, and I think all of us called him a friend. So, the final question though is, you have a going away retirement party, but it's your chance to invite everybody, because I got the next 72 hours to make sure we have lots of people there as the president of your fan club.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Huggins. We are Saturday night going to have a gathering out of the Eagles in the valley. It's located behind, kind of to the end, of, behind the Nugget Mall. It starts around 7 o'clock, and we're going to have, we're planning on having the Skits band not playing Skits music. So, as we jokingly call ourselves minimum wage in that particular capacity, but everyone is certainly invited to come and attend. We'd love to have everyone out there. I know Saturday night may be a little difficult for some because of the schedule. You know, if the intent is to gavel out on Sunday, but I would certainly love to have everyone who can make it come on out.
Yeah. Well, Jim, thank you very much as a prelude to your retirement party, and proud to be your friend.
Thank you, Senator. Very much appreciated.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Jim. With that, we're going to leave public testimony open. We're going to recess till tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. Can you make it? 6:30 p.m.